As I was sitting here thinking, you know, it's like I watch the Olympics and people get really excited, you know, when they win. And you just see that guy from Great Britain. Can you imagine that he won the 5,000 meter or something like that? And the whole stadium, they said, was just rocking. And I thought, it'd be cool when you get to heaven and it'll be like that, you know, where we're just. Anyway. What did I do with my little. Hopefully. Oh, I've lost my sheet. I want to do a little commercial. I was in a bookstore in Phoenix. I stopped by bookstores, and there's always a Christian section, you know. And I wrote these things down, and I thought I had it with me, but I don't. This is kind of a commercial. In the bookstore, there was several books I wrote down. There was 52 whys you hear every Sunday in church. And I kind of went through it, and I was like, number one, he wasn't a pastor, so I was like, well, it's easy for him to say. And then there was another 52 things your boy needs from a dad. There was another 88 dates for, really, 88 daddy-daughter dates, 88 of them that they listed in there. And there was another one, 6 things to keep the good in your boy. And if you add it up, I'm not real good at math. It's over 200 things that you had to. And I stopped because there were all these other things. And I thought, you know, it's just, think of when they came to Jesus and said, could you give us the 52 things? And what did he tell them? It's just 2. Love the Lord your God. Simple, you know. And your neighbor is yourself. Well, I've done that. You know, what's next? What's the second one? Just love your neighbor. I mean, anyway, that drove me crazy. I thought if you buy all these books, I'd have over 200 things to do more, you know, on my list. So anyway, we're looking at 1 Corinthians 16 verses. We're going to look at verses 1 through 4 again. Let me read them quickly, and then we're going to run around in the Old Testament, and I'll try to do it quickly. If I get too long, just get up and leave. No, don't do it. Don't do that. Paul writes, he had just talked about the resurrection, and therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. You ever get tired? You ever get, like, worn out and thinking, I've done enough? Don't give up, Paul said. Don't give up. Your toil is never in vain in the Lord. And now, concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. On the first day of every week, let each one of you put aside and save as he may prosper, that no collections be made when I come. And when I arrive, whomever you may approve, I shall send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. And it is fitting for me to go also. They will go with me. So there was this idea. He went through Macedonia and Asia and collected this money for the poor in Jerusalem. And he's gathering it together. And he basically says, you know, if it's big enough, I'll go with. So they made this collection. And he told them, last week we talked about several things. The purpose of the giving was for the saints. They were giving this money to the saints in Jerusalem. We talked last week about the attitude, and I looked up 1 Timothy chapter 6, where it's contentment. You know, some people thought that godliness was great gain, and Paul says, well, it is, if it's accompanied with contentment. You know, boy, how many people in the U.S. you think are content? Just, I got enough. That probably wouldn't be a good commercial, you know. You have enough. Don't buy any more cars. Don't buy any more. And then in 2 Corinthians, Paul says the other attitude, it ought to be out of your heart. It ought to not be grudgingly. It ought to be cheerfully. It ought to be give generously. That's what God wants out of us. Just don't give grudgingly. Give from your heart. Give cheerfully. It ought to be a happy thing. Not, oh, gee. The collection plate again. We don't do that. The collection plate stays back there. So, anyway, The second thing that Paul talked about in here is the period of giving. You ought to give regularly. It says at the first day of the week. It doesn't, you know, I don't want to make this another list of things where you got to do it on Sunday. You got to write your check, make sure, you know, because what I think Paul was saying is to give regularly. It ought to be a thoughtful thing. You know, it ought to be thoughtful. It ought to come up once, at least once a week. You know, that one of the songs we sing, when I wake up in the morning, do I realize he's with me? At the end of the day, am I still singing? Not always. You know, not always. But if I stop and think, you know, and I think sometimes that's why we have each other. There are days or weeks that you won't feel like singing. And that's why we kind of come around each other. Anyway, give regularly. The participants, Paul talks about, let each one of you give. I think that, and I've been listening to a lot of tapes and reading books about giving, and one of them talked about, you know, we ought to teach our kids to give. And I remember when I was, when I was a kid, in my church, you used to get envelopes, right? I mean, everybody had an envelope, and you used to write on the outside. And I don't know how but I got my own envelopes. And I had to, like, give. So there's some sense that maybe we've given up. I mean, and I know we're probably never going to take a collection, but maybe we've given something up by that. You know, that as it passes, kids need to know I ought to give something. Doesn't. So learning to give, everybody ought to participate, from little kids to us old kids. The last thing is the place to give. And there's this, it says, the collections to the churches, the collections be made when I come. There was in the ancient world, apparently the best place to keep your money in the pagan world was the temple. Because people would be afraid to break into the temple to steal the money. So that's actually where people saved their money, was in the temples, in the pagan temples. They gave their money. And in Jerusalem, that's where you came to give, was in the temples. That's where you stored up your money. So people, the translation of that is, when collections be made, it ought to be made to the church. I mean, and that's who God works through now, is in the church. Now, so that's kind of where to give. Now, we give to, you know, again, this isn't like, we give to other missionaries besides here, you know, and I think there's another sense of giving sometimes. And I get that Diane's brother does this sometimes. There are times in your life when your family may need money, like your parents or you can make that kind of part of your giving. There's a sense of it is. In the New Testament, they basically gave it to the saints in Jerusalem, and then they distributed it to whoever was in need. But I think there's times in our life, like when you got little kids, and there's, you know, and you got to take. Paul also talks about if you don't take care of your own family, you're worse than an infidel. I mean, there's times in your life that you got to be giving, not just here. Am I okay? But other needs that God may put on your heart. So anyway, now we're gonna the last thing. It says that he may put aside and save as he may prosper him. And the issue is how much to give. Paul says how he may prosper you. I mean, that what is the level of giving we ought to have? And The first principle I like using is in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Did I give that to anybody? Let me read it. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7. Let each one of you do just as he purposed in his heart, not grudgingly, not under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. So it ought to be what you purpose in your heart. Hopefully I didn't get people mad last week. If you feel God is telling you to give 10%, you ought to be given 10%. If that's what God has laid on your heart, at 10%, that's what you ought to be doing. Okay? In the couple places that I've studied, I looked at, you guys have heard of Criswell, right? Dr. Criswell, he was the first Baptist, and he has a book on pastoring churches, and it's really Baptist. And I looked up the whole thing about giving, and what do you think he says? About 10%. I mean, and he has good reasons. I'm not sure they're right reasons, but he has good ones. And he talks about how, you know, and I didn't grow up in a Baptist church. I never really thought about 10% before. You know, we just gave. We didn't really. But you read Criswell's book, and he will convince you that it's 10%, and it's got to be regular. And I'm thinking, well, I don't want to. 10%. That's what he says. You anybody read Dave Ramsey's stuff? What does he say? 10%. I just looked up his, minimum. That's his starting point. If you read Dave Ramsey, you can get on his website, and if you plug in your monthly income, and he tells you what you should be, and he breaks it down into categories. I just did this. So I plugged in $4,000 a month, and you give 10% to charity, 10% savings, 25% to your house, 5% to utilities, 10% for transportation, 7% for medical, and you have that total 67%, so you have stuff left over. You've guys gone through that, right? Have you gone through this? I hate to say this, but we never lived on a budget. We had one of those, like, jotted down budgets. We just wrote down what we spent, and then at the end of it, you're like, number one, where'd all this money go? And it's like, you all of a sudden we realize, if we really budgeted, what it did show was somehow God provided all this stuff. It shouldn't have added up, you know. We should have been in the hole. And so at the end of it, you're like, well, I guess it's okay. We'll just keep going. So we never really. Anyway. What I'd like us to look at, and then the last guy that I've kind of reviewed was, is it battery gone?
I think so.
Was, oh, yeah. I hate electricity. John MacArthur, and I really liked his stuff, and I gave out a bunch of verses. And his idea is you give proportionally, you give sacrificially, and you give voluntarily. You know, those are really important. It's any time, and I thought about this. Any time you give anything, in some sense, is a sacrifice. You know, every dollar you give could have been spent on a better house. A what? On a milkshake, yeah. No, she hasn't had one in a long time. So it could be spent somewhere else. And it just gives you this sense that I got to hold on to it loose. You know, hold on to it loose because it could all be gone tomorrow. Anyway, and he says there's no prescription, no amount, and no percentage. That's what he feels. And we're going to go over this and why he talks through this. In the Old Testament, there was required giving and then voluntary giving. And you kind of have to get understand, and I'm not going to get into the whole economics of the Old Testament, but it was a theocracy. The Jewish religion, the Levites and the Sadducees and the Pharisees were the government. That led your life. I mean, it was led from kind of the clergy down. I guess Islam is kind of the same thing. I mean, it's Sharia law. It's theological first. So that's kind of what when you read through the Old Testament, you got to really understand that. And MacArthur breaks it down into three different phases: Adam to Moses, Moses to Christ, and Christ to now. Because when you hear about people giving 10%, well, let me start back. Who has Genesis? Did I give Genesis chapter 4? I don't think I gave it to anybody. Genesis chapter 4 was one of the first sacrifices. Do you remember? You know who it was? No, no, way before that. Genesis chapter 4 was Cain and Abel. What did they do? It doesn't say, it just says they brought an offering. One was a farmer, one was a cattleman, whatever, a rancher. So what did they bring? Well, one brings grain, the other brings an animal. God says, I'm not pleased with just the grain. You need to bring an animal, and you know the rest of the story. But that was really the first sacrifice, an offering. Looking back, 6,000 years later, we understand why God said, bring a blood, bring a sacrifice, an animal sacrifice. Something has to die. Something needs to die. And wait till you see what the lamb is going to do eventually. So there was that sense that, and that was the first thing that God wanted was an animal. Who has Genesis chapter 8, verse 20? Who did I give that to? Could you read it? This is Noah. Well, read it. Go ahead. This was voluntary. It was like, well, can you imagine after how many years was he preaching? We just went through this in Genesis. I forget how many, 120 years he's preaching. Nobody listens except his family, which was good. At least somebody listened. And at the end of it, now that he's in the ark, how long was he in the ark? This is terrible. I don't know this. A year. Well, at the end of this year, it's like the land, it dries up, the ark parks itself, and the first thing he does is, I got to give thanks. I need to give an offering. It was a voluntary thing. It doesn't say God commanded him to give this offering. It says, man, he saved us. He protected my family. He kept us away from the judgment. So I'm going to bring and he talks about that, one of every one of the clean animals. That he sacrificed them. I mean, this was a big deal. This was food that he would have to live on. He says, well, I'm going to sacrifice those. Who has the next offering is in Genesis chapter 14, 18 through 20. Who did I give that one to?
That Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed Abram, saying, blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hand. And Abram gave him a tenth of everything.
Does it say God commanded him to give a tenth? No. This was right after Abram went out and conquered these five kings, and he had a bunch of spoils, and then he met Melchizedek, another king, and he just decided on his own to give 10%. And there's a whole thing about it was 10% of the top of the spoils. Wasn't 10% of everything Abraham had. It was 10% of the top of the spoils that he just got. It also never says that he ever did it again. It never says, God said, now do this every year. Do this every Sunday, every Sabbath. It said it's recorded that he only did it once. And it's also kind of interesting, this is what MacArthur brings up. In the pagan world, they figured 10%. That's what they gave. And you know how they figured 10%? They counted on their fingers. It was an easy way to count. It's kind of like, even though I don't like metric system because I can't figure it out, but it's divisible by 10. So they would give, that's how people counted. You have 10 fingers, you give 10%. That was the principle where 10% came from. So when your kid is going like, well, I still do that sometimes. But Abraham did it once. Abram did it once. God never said, give 10% to Melchizedek. He did it voluntarily. He said, man, I just got, he just won this war, got all these spoils, I'm going to give 10%. Who's got the next offering is a tough one. Who's got Genesis chapter 22, verse 2? Anybody? Yeah.
Regarding the offering of Isaac. And God said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, go to the region of Moriah. Sacrificing there as a burnt offering on the mountains, I will tell you about.
When we get to this in Genesis with the men's group, I mean, think of what God was asking Abram to do. Abraham to do. This would, you know, this would make 10% look pretty easy. Sacrifice your son, your only son. You know, that when you think about that story, and then in Hebrews, it refers back to that where it says Abram knew that God would be able to bring him back from the dead because God made him a promise. It's going to be through Isaac. Now I want to see if you really trust me. Give up your only son? Really, when you read that and you think about it, if you have kids and you think about your son, again, it kind of makes giving money no big deal. And you know the story. I mean, God provided a lamb, stopped him at the last minute. And, again, this is a you're not only looking at the character of Abraham, but you're looking at the character of our God. I need a sacrifice, and I'm going to provide it for you. Who's got Genesis chapter 28, verses 20 through 22? This is and let me give you a background. This is Jacob. And listen, you got to listen to this story. It's in Genesis chapter 28, verses 20 through 22. Read it.
Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I'm taking, and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. And this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And all that you give me, I will give you a tenth.
Is this like one of those fleece deals? You know, you're putting out a fleece? He said, okay, God, if you protect me on my journey, you provide for me, you give me food, you give me all this stuff, then I'll give you 10. I'll give you 10%. This is when people refer to, you know, this is another part where in the pagan world that 10% was kind of like a deal. That was part of the deal. They had to come up with a number, so they used 10%. And Jacob's making a deal with God. That's the other thing I like about the Old Testament and people in the Old. It's easy to go, come on, Jacob. Until I think about deals I try to make. You know, and I think I've told you this story. When I was a relatively new believer, and I was trying to, this has to do somewhat with giving, and I wanted to buy a new car, and I was living at home. I was like one of those failure to launch guys, so I had all this, I thought I had all kinds of money, and so I wanted to buy, and it was a Cutlass Supreme Brougham in 1978. That was like the car, man. It was like cloth interior. I mean, it was the electric windows, everything. So I said, God, if you just let me get this car. It was $6,000. Can you imagine? Can't hardly buy anything for $6,000. And I said, if you let me get this car, I'll use it in the ministry. Really? I mean, that was the deal. That was the deal. So we're driving kids up to Northern Wisconsin on a canoe trip. I got like six boys in this nice car. And we're driving up there, and we get to the first campsite, and in those days you had a CB radio, remember those? And you had a magnetic antenna that stuck on the top. So I stuck it on the top, and we're doing the 10-4, good buddy, did all these. So we get to the campsite, and I didn't want anybody to steal it, right? Steal the not only the car, but the CB radio. So I said to the one kid, I said, will you get the antenna off the top of my car? He takes the antenna and drags it across my brand new painted car. Scratches. I was like, you idiot! You know. And I thought, okay, you make a deal. Every time I saw those scratches, I thought, okay, it's a car. I never fixed it. I wanted them fixed, and I thought, this is a lesson. So that's what Jacob was doing. You know, just provide for me, keep me safe, do all this stuff, and I'll give you 10. I mean, think about that a minute. Think back. Now we look back at the cross. He's already provided. He's already given us anything, everything. That's what he talks. I'm going to provide all things all the time. Let go. Stupid car. I mean, it really is. And I've made other deals with God. It wasn't just that one. I mean, I wish I could say that was over. But and then who's got Genesis 41, verse 34?
Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land of the dead, the harvest,
for 7 years of the harvest. Okay, so in Genesis there was this time that, and it was never prescribed. If you look at it, God never commanded them to give 10%. Then in Genesis chapter 41, this is at the, you know, when Joseph interprets the dreams. And he goes to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, tell me what the dreams mean. And he says, you're going to have 7 years good year, 7 years of famine, and this is what you need to do. And God commanded them at that point to give not 10%, it says a fifth. If you're good at math, that's 20%, right? Yeah, 20%. Put it in storage in the 7 good years so that you have stuff in the 7 bad years. This was like a tax. Not like a tax. This was a tax. This wasn't voluntary. You gave one fifth of everything you had went into the storehouse, saved the nation of Egypt, which eventually saved the nation of Israel. And it was a tax. It's repeated again in chapter 47. Did I give anybody 47? It's the same thing. It was again. They reiterated the thing about 20%. What MacArthur kind of talks through is that there's this required giving that was more of like a tax, and then there is voluntary giving. And it's kind of interesting, and I don't know what the tax rates are, but the United States pays about 20%. Is that right? You think that's about right? Depends on, yeah, I guess, what's the highest bracket, 30? Higher than that, 35, 38%, whatever. But I guess, the issue is a lot of the giving, the required giving in the Old Testament was really a tax, okay? Now we're going to look from Moses to Christ. Now this is where, I want to go through this kind of quick because some of these are, who's got Leviticus 37? Did I give that to anybody? Let me read it. This was when God said to the nation of Israel, you got to give a tithe to the Levites. If you remember when they broke up the land between the 12 tribes, and the Levites didn't get any land. They didn't get any land. It's like, guess what you get? Your inheritance is God. Can you imagine? I mean, I wonder if they felt slighted at all. You know, I mean, everybody's getting all this land, and then they said to the Levites, you don't get anything. Just me. Just God. And so in Leviticus, it says that what the rest of the nation was supposed to do was to give them 10%. The Levites ran the country. That was how you related to God. You brought sacrifices to the Levites. So it was a tax. That 10% was a tax to run the nation. Who's got Deuteronomy 12, 10 through 18? That was a long one. Yeah.
Offer them only in the place the Lord will choose in one of your tribes. And there, observe everything I command you. Nevertheless, you may slaughter your animals at any of your towns, and eat as much of the meat as you want. As if it were gazelle or deer, according to the blessing the Lord your God gives you, both the ceremonially unclean and the clean may eat it. But you must not eat the blood. Pour it out on the ground like water. You must not eat in your own towns the tithe of your grain, new wine, and oil, or the firstborn of your herds and flocks, or whatever you vow to give of your free will offerings or special gifts. Instead, you are to eat them in the presence of the Lord, your God, at the place the Lord, your God, will choose. You, your sons and daughters, your manservants and maidservants, and the Levites in your town. And you are to rejoice before the Lord, your God, in everything you put your hand to.
There was another 10% thing. That you give 10% to have a party for this festival. It's like you get to rejoice over the food that God has given you, and it's like you can have this like potluck all the time and rejoice that God's given you this, and put away 10% for that and celebrate. Look what God has done. It's like throw a party. Enjoy your manservant and your maidservant and your kids, and give another 10% just to celebrate who God is, what he's done for you. And then he prescribes, you know, the firstborn you do it another time, and where God prescribed it should be eaten. But it was all for the festivals. There was one last 10% thing. Who's got Deuteronomy 14:20? Maybe I didn't give that out. Did I give that to you? Oh, I did? There's a Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 20. I think we got that close. Let me, 14:20. Let me, is this making sense? Oh, no, 14:28. I'm sorry. Let me read it. And at the end of every third year, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in that year and shall deposit it in your town. There was a third tithe. Every third year, you brought another 10%. So that would be, if you divide it out, 3.3% every year for the poor. That's what it was for. So in essence, the tax to the nation of Israel was 10% to the Levites, 10% for the festival, so that you support the whole sacrificial system and the festivals that you get to celebrate, and then 3.3% a year for the poor. Then there was one final one, 19... verses 9 and 10.
When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time, but pick the grapes and the fallen. Leave them to the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God.
Finally, there was this, like, MacArthur calls this the profit tax on your profits. You had a field, you had a square field, you'd leave all the corners for the poor. Take all you want. Take everything you want. But don't harvest the corners. Leave that for the poor. So there was, like, if nothing else, the nation of Israel, what did they know they should be doing? Thinking and giving back to God. And there was a tax, and then there was a free will offering. I'm going to have to skip over some of this stuff. One other story I want to talk about is in Genesis chapter 25, when God, Moses came to the people and said, "All right, we're going to take a collection for the temple." And it says in chapter 35, let me read these quick. Am I going? 35 verses 21 through 20 through. No. 21 through 22. And everyone whose heart was stirred, whose heart stirred him, and everyone whose spirit moved him came and brought the Lord's contribution for the work of the tent of the meeting, for all its services, and for the holy garments. Then all whose hearts were moved, who moved them, both men and women, came and brought brooches and earrings and signet rings and bracelets, all the articles of gold. So did every man who presented an offering of gold to the Lord. There was this, remember that? This God says, start bringing an offering so we can build the tabernacle. At the end of it, and it was, and you read through this in verse 5, in verses 20 through 21, verse 29. How whatever God moved their heart, they brought it. You know, can you imagine sitting there looking at the gold you just got out of Egypt and you go, how much should I give? Whatever your heart, God moved your heart, give it. And at the end of it, in chapter 36 of Exodus, and I know you, at the end of it, Moses said, you can quit giving. We've got enough. Have you ever heard that on TV? You ever have a guy get on TV and say, listen, stop sending your $1,000 in here. We have enough. We have enough. I don't need a private plane. Wouldn't that be nice? Some guy just got up there and said, I don't need to live. One of those guys was living in was spending $1,400 a night on a hotel room, asking little old ladies for 10 bucks. When in Exodus, when God allowed people to and move their heart, they finally said, stop it. You can quit giving. You've got enough. And here's the point. And this is hard for me because you live in America, you can't not think about money. You know, it's on, and I watch too much TV. I look every time a car commercial's on. I said to Diane, "Well, maybe I need a Camry. Well, then I need a Toyota Tundra. Well, then it's a Lexus." You know, those commercials. I don't know if is anybody else affected by commercials? No, nobody, never, never. They never make you hungry. The point is, as believers, I think God wants us to think about this. You know, let me tell a couple stories. When we bought our house, I went to the bank, and we were able to move up in a house because I got some money from an aunt that died. So it wasn't like I earned all this. And I remember going to the bank, and the bank said, you can afford $1,500 a month. This was in 1994. Our house payment at that time was $400, and we were just making it. And I looked at this banker, and I said, are you nuts? $1,100 more a month? Well, yeah, look at the numbers. And, you know, don't listen to bankers. Yeah. Don't listen to them. And then we kind of just purposed in our heart. And we went up. It's funny when you get a little inheritance, you know, we didn't like keep our lifestyle here. We jumped up a little bit. And I just think we need to think about it. You know, you can't look at anybody else's house. Don't look around at my car, my house, and think, gee, I wish I had that. Because we just had a big gas leak at our house. You don't want that. Do what God has laid on your heart. Not mine. Not your neighbor's. Not what the church says, not what they make you guilt you in, not what TV says, what God says. What God says to you personally. It's way freer. It's way more fun. And I think we've talked about this. Sometimes when we don't know what we're going to give, and I say, Diane says, what do you think? And I'm going, well, what do you think? To try to figure out who's higher, you know, because you don't always go to the high one. And so many times it's like almost identical. Go for it. Don't. Anyway, that's what I think. I'm not going to talk about giving unless it comes up ever again. And it's gonna. I mean, you can't read the scripture until it. But I think we ought to be so free and loose with our money. And when I'm talking like this, I'm thinking, I know I'm going to get home and Diane's going to go, well, what you, you know, I'm not, she's probably more generous than I am. Give what God put on your heart. And watch him. Watch. It's kind of like, ever listen to the Red Green Show? There was a line in there. The guy said, he used to have a counseling session, and he says, I'm talking to all you guys over 40. You realize nothing good ever comes after watch this? But you know what? If you give, and I don't want to sound like a TV preacher, but when you give what God put on your heart, watch him. Watch him. Because if you think you can outgive him, try it. Try it. Let's pray. Father, when we really stop and just, if we would pause for a minute and think what we brought into this world and what we have been given. You know, and there's different levels, there's different lifestyles, we live in different houses, drive different cars. But in reality, Father, everything we have has been a gift from you. Father, help us to understand this, and that we teach all of us, teach me, to when you put stuff in our hands, time and money and cars, and that we hold on to them loose, that we learn to be generous like you are. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen. And I have just another commercial. Look at Brent's t-shirt. I looked at it and it said, what does it say on it? My Father can fix anything. And it's the cross. And I thought, what a good thing for giving. You know, just watch him. You think you can outgive him? Anyway, we'll see you at John's.